Captain's log, stardate 46235.7. After watching one of the best cerebral installments of The Next Generation in Darmok, the crew of the Apocalypse Video Trekcast returned to the sillier side of Trek with Season 6's Rascals, an episode that has more in common with a Saturday morning cartoon than with heady sci-fi. Nevertheless, the crew is looking forward to the zany antics of our newly de-aged heroes, as well as our first encounter with the D-grade villains of Star Trek, the butt-headed Ferengi.
In the not-too-distant future, four movie fans awaken from a nuclear nightmare, only to discover that the world is a barren, movieless wasteland. However, the destiny of our four heroes is not set. A chance discovery in Sector 2, and an unfortunate accident that rips the very soul from one of their own, will lead them down the path of bringing the lost art of cinema back to the wasteland.
Welcome to Apocalypse Video.
A transporter malfunction transforms the crew into children.
Are you here to relieve me of duty? I am still Jean-Luc Picard.
And a powerless young captain is about to lose his ship to hostile aliens.
Computer, deactivate all command functions. Authorization, Riker Omega 3.
We have secured the bridge.
Stripped of command, can Picard stop a savage attack?
I will execute every child on this ship.
On Star Trek, The Next Generation.
Hello, welcome back to another exciting adventure of the Apocalypse Video Trekcast. I'm your host, Dave. I'm joined again by my fellow crew members, Mike.
I want to see my father! Now!
And Jackie.
He's my number one dad.
Well, Ensign Michael, I want to ask you something first. I probably should have asked this when I was going through the recruitment process. But have you now or have you ever been a jumper?
It's always the quiet ones.
It's always the quiet ones. You think they're fine, you turn your back and...
We are talking about Season 6's Rascals. And if you guys recall, I don't remember if this was on mic or off mic, but I remember saying when you chose this episode, Jackie, that I was like, are you sure that's Season 6? That seems like a Season 7 episode. But it's Season 6, which is possibly, at least for my money, maybe, like, you know, peak Next Gen. Season 4 through 6 is probably peak Next Gen, and this feels like an episode...
Are you implying this is like the premise of this is a bottom of the barrel kind of thing?
Not necessarily. I think it's just goofy. Like, it feels like a premise that you would see in like a Saturday morning cartoon.
Yeah,
of Star Trek.
It's definitely, yeah, that kind of plot which you'll see in like cartoony kind of stuff of like,
yeah.
What the heck? We're 11 years old now.
It's one step away from like the sitcom thing of like they got hit in the head with a frying pan and they don't know who they are,
or like it feels like almost equivalent to like a Freaky Friday kind of thing of like, well, geez, yeah. How are we gonna get out of this?
Well, let's waste no time. We could be growing younger as we speak. We don't know the effects of this energy thing. Jackie, this was science mumbo jumbo. Jackie, this was your pick. Why don't you explain to anyone who hasn't seen Rascals what this is all about?
Yeah, so we start off, we're on a shuttle coming back from a shore leave with a couple of Enterprise crew members. We got Captain Picard, Ensign Roe, Keiko O'Brien, and Guinan. And I really like how this starts because it's literally like, yeah, we're all catching the same bus home. and Picard's going on in like a really dorky way about like the archaeological fragments that he found on vacation, and Guinan and Ro, like, or Guinan and Cake, or something. They're kind of looking at each other like, this guy.
Well, what's so funny about this moment is that they start talking, he starts going on about these are nearly 700 years old and they're almost perfectly intact, and they're all rolling their eyes. And then it then cut to like, Keiko, who's just like, oh, I got these plant things. And I desperately wanted a cut back to Picard rolling his eyes.
Picard being like, well, I don't care about your thing.
Plants. This fragments of pottery, though.
Much more
interesting. This is 700 years old. Clearly it's cooler.
And it's it's this setup with the plants, specifically Keiko, who's like a plant biologist type, has some plants that will come back later in the episode, because when these humans turn into children, the plants will also turn into seedlings, and it is, you know, related to the energy field malfunction or whatever thing. But it's also like, it's a really cute Ro moment where she's like asking a plant question, and then is like, oh, well, I took like a class one time, and I just want to say at the top that I really like Ro because she's cool and tough, and she's been through the shit, and she's kind of a bitch, and I love her.
And she don't need no friends, okay?
She doesn't need friends. She doesn't need a fun time, but she likes it. So they're on the shuttle back, and then we cut back to the Enterprise, and there's more tech mumbo jumbo about like the energy field is causing this, and we need to bring the shuttle in and hurry up and lock onto the ship before it explodes. Wait a second, we've lost about 40% mass. And then we see our crew members beamed aboard the Enterprise. But what's this? They're kids and they're wearing big clothes. Uh-oh.
There's a 40% drop in mass. I may have lost one of them.
Thank you, Mr. O'Brien. Another moment and...
O'Brien's like, oh, I'm still getting a divorce.
The O'Brien stuff of it all is so uncomfortable.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah.
But we'll get into that. So yeah, we've got the young Picard...
With hair
and his squeaky little voice, and all the kids sitting in sick bay with like Dr. Crusher and Riker and Troy being like, well, they still have their adult, you know, minds and experiences and everything, but they are pre-adolescent. And Picard's like, well, time to tug down my tiny little shirt and go to work as captain.
Status report.
Everyone's like, buddy.
Number one, you're with me.
Buddy. It's not going to work.
He still has all of his Picardisms. Like,
he does,
I love
when he tugs on the shirt. It's so cute.
He's a good, good little kid actor.
It's good casting for young Picard. And he's just so cute.
Well, it's great because Picard, even though he appears to be a pre-adolescent, he's all business. These are classic Picardisms, because he does his classic Picard avoidance, where he buries himself into work if something's going wrong. And when someone's trying to tell him something or whatever, he just stares at his desktop in his ready room. He's like, yeah, whatever. Like, I'm playing
Solitaire. They go to the bridge, and then, after they go to sickbay, they go to the bridge, and he's, like, trying to...
He's given normal commands.
Everyone's
like,
just, like, staring at him like, buddy.
I mean, like, imagine you're at work, and then some 12-year-old comes in and is, like, trying to act like things normal, and everyone's I don't know.
It's great because I would say if there's one fault in this kid's performance is that he says Picard a little weird.
He says Picard.
I'm still Captain Picard.
Maybe when he was that age, he was trying to like put a little spin on it, as kids will do. You know, sometimes kids are like, what if I start going by my middle name or something like that? And everyone else is like, what are you talking about? You're like, never mind. Never mind.
I assure you, I'm still Captain Picard. I still drink Earl Grey tea hot.
Earl Grey tea hot. No, I really like that the scene between him and Crusher right after that, where he's trying to give his orders. Everyone's looking around like, I don't know. And Crusher's like, hey, man, let's go talk in your ready room. And they go in there and he's like, OK, you're going to relieve me of command. Is that what's going on? She's like, come on.
I'm about to let you.
Come on. You know, I gotta. You are 12. And he's like, yeah.
I see that Lygos 7 is prone to periodic volcanic activity. Perhaps the planet has entered an active phase.
Jean-Luc, we need to talk.
All right, let's talk. Are you here to relieve me of duty?
I'd rather not have to take that step.
I am still Jean-Luc Picard. My judgment, my experiences, my mental capacities are all intact.
That's true. For now. But this could be the first stage of a condition that may begin to affect your mind as well.
But you see no evidence of that.
Not yet. What I do know is that the captain of this ship has undergone an extreme physical transformation, the ultimate effects of which I can't even begin to guess.
You are asking me to step down.
You are still Jean-Luc Picard. What do you think you should do?
Commander Riker, please take command of the ship until further notice.
Understood.
What would Picard do?
What would, regular middle-aged Picard do here, buddy?
And then he, just comes back out of the bridge, like, with Beverly Crusher standing behind him. Like, Riker, you're on command until further notice.
And he just goes to sit in his room. I like a little later we see him, this is jumping ahead a little bit, but he's like running a hand over his smooth pre-adolescent chin in a kind of like disappointed way, but then he starts running his hands mm-hmm. through his like thick head of hair and he's kind of like, well, hey, that's pretty cool.
There's some interesting, I feel like out of all the all of the plot beats with them like trying to grapple with this thing that's happened to them, like Picard's are kind of like the most subtle, or rather his plot allows like for the more subtle bits of acting, like you said, with just kind of like, oh, I'm so young but I have hair, you know,
but this hair is pretty good,
this hair, like I think they do a good job of like tackling all the interesting questions that would be specific to each of these people in their lives. Like Picard's all about command. He's like, Troy, are you fucking kidding me? I can't go back to the academy. What do you want me to be? Wesley Crusher's roommate. Get real, Troy.
Get real. Yeah, there's that. I think also like, you know, I think the actor for young Picard is, seems like maybe a little bit older and a little bit of a better actor than the other kid ones. But I think it is like visually like really good casting for all of them.
Definitely,
I love young Guinan, where she really gets that kind of Whoopi Goldberg like, all right, well, hey, we're here. Let's just
she's not concerned
go with
at all.
The flow. I mean, yeah, Guinan is in canon, like, hundreds and hundreds of years old. She's like, well, I'm 12. All right. That's what we're doing.
I'm doing this over again. That's all good.
I guess so. I'm wearing a slightly smaller version of my cool purple outfit and purple boots. Yeah, okay.
It's also, like, Guinan basically teams up with Ro in this episode. It's like they all don't have their own individual things. Like, Guinan teams up with Ro because, as you said, Guinan's just like, whatever.
I'll go with it.
I get to jump out of bed again. Whatever.
Ro
classic,
is,
classic Guinan.
Classic Guinan.
Classic Guinan.
Ro is pissed off because her childhood was, she's a Bajoran, like, war orphan and grew up in a refugee camp. I did like when Guinan's like, well, you didn't have fun as a kid? And she's like, I grew up in a refugee camp, Guinan. Of course I didn't have fun.
Yeah, didn't you jump on beds? I didn't have a bed.
I didn't have a bed. She's like, you probably did sometimes. And I bet you jumped on it.
Nobody gets my backstory.
But get back into it. All the newly turned kids are grappling with their, being adults trapped in little kid bodies, which does come to, as we said, the creepiest part of it all, which is Keiko and O'Brien, who are a married couple with a young child, and they're like in their room together, and O'Brien is sitting on the couch, like curled into himself, just like clearly screaming internally about like what the fuck is gonna go on.
He has a good line in the beginning of this one of these scenes where he's like, "I could use a cup of coffee."
He's like, "I could go for a coffee."
You could tell he's just like, I need like booze and I need it fast.
I wish I had whiskey. Fuck.
I could use a cup of coffee. How about you?
I'll get it. Two coffees, one with cream and sugar, the other
black,
one...
Black, double sweet.
I know. One double sweet.
Careful, that's hot.
Miles.
Sorry.
What's wrong?
It's... I don't know, but this feels wrong somehow.
Miles Edward O'Brien, I am still your wife.
Well, technically, yes.
Technically?
No, I mean, of course you're my wife. But you're also 10 years old.
Beverly said it's actually closer to 12.
Now, that's not the point.
So what is the point? Is our marriage over?
I didn't say that. But, well, until they find a way to reverse this effect, it's hard for me to ignore the fact that you're a little girl.
What if they can't find a way? What if I'm like this for the rest of my life? What does that mean for us? For our family?
I love how he's just like sitting there.
He's just like, hands on his, you know, legs crossed. He's just like, okay.
Just like, yeah, well, I just imagine, he plays it really well where I'm just like imagining like what is going through his head. Like, is he like, do I need to like just leave? Like do I?
That's, it's the part that we're like, the show isn't creepy about it, but it's the part of it that is.
It.
The creepiest, because yeah, imagine you are a married adult, your wife turns into a pre-adolescent child, but she, as a, you know, adult, is upset and wants, you know, comfort from you, her partner, but you're like, I should not touch you, I should not be near you, you are...
She's not making it any better when he's like, you're 10 years old. And he's like, I'm more like 12.
Yeah, she's like, no, that's not okay.
It's not helping.
Well, they make a point of saying in the episode, I think Crusher says this, it's like they're all physically kids, but like mentally they all have their, you know, their experience and this, their physical or their mental capacities.
Their adult brains, which, you know, and it goes back to like heartbreaking when, The O'Brien baby is like, I want a story from mommy. And she's like, okay, let's. And then the baby's like, you're not mommy.
No,
you're not mama. My mommy. And it's like, yeah, imagine you're an adult who has been turned into a child, and your baby doesn't recognize you, and your partner is extremely physically uncomfortable around you. And that would be very, very lonely in this sci-fi setting.
This episode's kind of interesting because it got me thinking, like, they do raise a lot of interesting dilemmas, you know, specifically the O'Brien-Keiko relationship. But the thing with this episode is, like, it does a great job of raising those questions, but I don't know if they really, like, that whole scene, that all happens in that one scene. Nothing else really comes of that other than O'Brien going, we'll get through this. That's it. Like, there's no like long term things or anything. It's all wrapped up by the end of the episode. But it's kind of more like we don't know what the answers are to these questions. We just want to have these interesting dilemmas.
Yeah, it's something that's talked out a little more in the Picard aspect of it in the scene with him and Troy, where he's asking like, if there isn't a cure and I'm stuck like this, what should I do? And that is basically kind of what Keiko asks as well. But with the Picard side of it, it gets to be like, well, you could go back to the academy. You could do this. You could explore archaeology. You could like have, a whole new, career, a second chance, all this stuff. But for Keiko, it's not as talked out and it's not as answered, because the answer there would be like, so husband, like what happens if I'm stuck like this? And realistically, it feels like the answer would divorce. Be like, yeah, I'm going to leave for like 10 years because this can't happen.
Yeah, I imagine there's probably a lot of unreturned text messages that from Keiko or for Keiko from O'Brien. Like, why aren't you answering my text?
It's like, it's you.
I can see the little mess. I can see the little thing on the bottom right hand corner that you read my message. You son of a
bitch. Left me on red.
You read my message.
I know
Miles.
You read it. And then your child has to grow up and be like, hey, how come your mom is like only 10 years old? What the fuck?
You're a monster.
Why? What happened to you? Everyone, then looks at O'Brien of like, what? Fuck is
why is he? Why is he married to someone who's 30 years younger
Jesus
than him?
Jesus, O'Brien. He's like, no, we were 3 years apart when we got married.
You're 60 years old, and your wife is 18.
Creep.
Yeah, it's harder to imagine like how they could have solved this with the Keiko O'Brien thing. Like Picard actually has like the one that's Picard
he's
is
got
the
options.
One that, he's got options, and also I was thinking during this episode, at least as far as Picard goes. Has there not been a Doogie Howser in all of Star Trek universe? You know,
it's
like surely...
there must be. Yeah,
isn't that just Wesley?
That's kind of
Wesley.
Oh, and I love that line. I don't think we mentioned it. How when he's like going over his options, he's
we mentioned the Wesley Crusher roommate.
Yeah. Wesley's roommate.
Yeah, when Troy is like, you could go back to the academy. Yeah, the disdainful and be Wesley Crusher's roommate.
Can you imagine? Ugh. Now, Captain Picard. So if there's a sock on the door handle,
Wesley, no.
That means don't come in, okay?
So, Captain,
I hereby resign.
Captain, I was going to go to a kegger later. Do you want to come with? No, oh Mr. Crusher. I will be
I would
staying
watch that show.
In and reading again.
The single camera sitcom of Wesley Crusher and little Picard.
Who's like, what, like 5 years older or something at that point. And Picard who's like, I will not go to parties. I will be in the library if you need me.
Yeah. That's usually like the part where the audience like laughs, like, you know, like, come on, we're going to a kegger. And you cut to Picard with an old book, like, I don't think so. Yes.
God.
Oh, shut up, Wesley.
And I did, before we get into the Ferengi plot of it, the other, the grappling with being children part of the Ro and Guinan, their exchange about jumping on beds, where Guinan is like, "Oh yeah, you're a jumper.
You're a jumper.
You jump on furniture. I bet you did. I lived in a refugee camp. Yeah, but I bet you jumped on furniture." And it's I think the kid actor for Ro is like not like the most talented there's ever been, but I really liked that scene. Wow. Because I mean, sorry to talk shit on the child, but it's a really good scene because it's one of those moments of like when kids do that thing where they're trying so hard to be mad but they're smiling, and it's really cute where they're jumping on the bed, and as I said, I've got a soft spot for Ro.
I have a suspicion that Guinan too, just like because what we know of her, she's close to like a god or a Q.
Something like that.
I feel like she could turn back to regular she wanted to this whole time.
She's like, well, yeah, that's my back
pocket.
She's
just like going with it. Like,
yeah,
whatever.
She's going with the flow. That's what she does. But anyway,
their story is interesting because it's less. I feel like their story isn't concerned at all with how are we going to live with this. It's more of a kind of an interesting glimpse into Ensign Rose's character, just in general. Yeah.
And this was I was reading about the kind of behind the scenes. This was going to be the last appearance of, like, this was going to be it for Ro.
Really?
Oh,
yeah. No. And there was actually the. There's a funny anecdote I saw that the we'll get to it, but at the end the episode ends with her kind of let's be a child for a little bit longer, you know, no rush kind of thing, and the actress was like, what if we should like keep her as a kid forever and like just have her you know, be a kid. And the apparently like the writers said that was, quote, absolutely insane.
Well, you know, that's the beauty of Star Trek. You can put out any kind of possibility out there. I wanted to note also, cuz I just noticed this on the Chatopedia, that this episode was directed by Adam Nimoy.
Directorial debut.
Yeah.
Is it? Oh, wow.
Yeah,
okay.
Son of Leonard Nimoy, Mr.
He wanted
Spock.
To be, he was like going to be an attorney, and then he was like, nope, never mind. I'm going to direct Star Trek.
I am a showbiz
I'm going to do way more fun job of directing Star Trek.
I got wind of this interesting episode they plan on doing on The Next Generation where they all are turned into kids. That sounds interesting to me.
Let's try that.
I think he went on to direct quite a few episodes of Next Generation.
He's done a good amount of directing. Yeah, so...
should we get in the Ferengi?
Yeah, in the midst...
And that, I mean, and that's something, too, that I saw in the Chatopedia that... So they, you know, they turn to kids, and then it's like, all right, now we got to have, like, some conflict, or, you know, something's got to go down. And they were talking, there was some struggling of, like, what should happen? Like, and they did rule out, like, well, it can't be, like, the Cardassians or the Borg or the Romulans.
It can't be something serious.
Because that would be, like, too...
Who's our, like, D-grade
villain? Who is our D-grade villain?
Exactly. Like, it'd be too grim. If, like, can you imagine, like, the Cardassians, like, that torture episode with Picard
God.
And the Cardassians?
Oh,
like, you can't...
They're awful lights!
They're awful!
Oh, my God! Oh, that doesn't happen. Instead, we've got a band of Ferengi.
The dumbest Ferengi.
Yeah, they're coming through. And honestly, like, I've seen this episode several times, and I always forget that the Ferengi do show up. But they come through, and oh no, they're gonna round up all the adults to like beam off the ship to do this mining thing.
And politely keeping the kids.
We're gonna keep the kids over on that room. I wonder.
I
if we
laughed
can...
at that moment where they say, "Move all able-bodied
adults."
Adults.
Like,
okay.
Specifically the adults.
Pretty convenient here.
And I don't know if it's because in our free time we've been catching up on some Deep Space Nine, which does feature the Ferengi in a slightly more let's say, like, character
dignified
forward.
I think Deep Space Nine is all about the more nuances.
It definitely, you know? But maybe it's because of that. But I felt much more charitably towards the Ferengi in this episode. In
they
general.
Do establish that the Ferengi here are not part of the Ferengi Alliance, so these are particularly
these are just some dudes.
Yet they cite the Ferengi code or whatever. Where
it's
like
the
Ferengi
salvage code,
which makes no sense. We attack your ship and now we get to salvage it.
Yeah,
it's
I
all
mean,
legit.
Nothing about the Ferengi makes sense. And that's okay.
No.
But so they come through, they've got this whole plot of they're, you know, using Starfleet to like mine some mineral on the planet that they've that they're parked above and they are gonna like sell the Enterprise to I forget, the Romulans or something, or I don't know, someone. But Meanwhile, we've got Kid Picard and all the other adults turned kids in the schoolroom with the other actual children, including my favorite sweet little boy, Alexander, poor son.
He's just playing with his remote control car.
I just love whenever Alexander shows up because a kid that tiny in Klingon makeup is just always so cute to me.
You guys know who that kid is, right?
No.
Who?
That is the same kid who was the star of Disney's Blank Check.
How about that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't think I've seen Blank Check since I was kid's age.
We should probably watch that movie for the show at some point.
Might be a good one.
Well, yeah. In my heart,
isn't the plot of that, like, from what I remember, it's like he gets $1 million, but with that $1 million he does like hundreds of millions of dollars of spending.
Well, $1 million went a lot further back in the day. Anyway,
he gets a blank check and he decides to write down, like, the guy signs it quickly because the cops are coming and he's like an escaped convict or something, and he just signs it and he's just like, here, give it to your dad, he'll know what to do. And the kid decides to write down $1 million. And again, what a stupid kid, because again, like, they do this in movies all the time where, like, somehow the cap for people is $1 million. I'm like, are you kidding me? That is not enough money. You need to go higher than $1 million.
You know what's better than $1 million?
$1 billion.
Anyway, in my heart, that kid is Alexander Reshenko, aka son of Worf.
Son of Moog.
Yeah. So we're the kids are away from the plot. The Ferengi are guarding everything, and so the kids have to come up with a ploy to try to access the, you know, kids' computer that's in the schoolroom, which I also enjoyed. The classroom computer's like a little fish icon, and Picard is like, show me the interior specs of the entrance. Like, I can't do that. Would you like to play a game or look at pictures of interesting plants and animals?
No, goddammit, no!
I would like to see. And so they have to work around that. As Guinan says, you know, we have to, we're not adults right now.
It's for a child, Jean-Luc. It's a child's computer.
I love the gravity with which that child Guinan says, Jean-Luc. So much.
He just has the heaviest sigh too, like,
Computer display interior security grid.
I'm sorry, but I can't do that. Would you like to play a game?
No, I would not. Computer display an internal schematic diagram.
I'm sorry, but I can't do that. Would you like to see some interesting plants or animals?
It's a child's computer, remember? Computer, can you show me a picture of the inside of the Enterprise?
Yes, I can. The Enterprise is a Galaxy-class starship. Do you know how to spell Enterprise? E-N-T-E.
Delete audio.
So yeah, they have to think like kids.
The Enterprise is spelled E-N-T-E.
Delete audio! He doesn't just mute it, he deletes it.
Delete audio.
Yeah, that was an interesting little bit. Like, I gotta wonder, yeah, because you'd think he would say something like mute or something, but he goes as far as to say, delete all you.
Computer explode. Damn it. But yeah, they have to think like kids and crawl through the extra tiny kid-sized Jeffrey's tubes and such to outsmart the Ferengi, and because the Ferengi are not that smart, it's pretty easy to do. But it does first involve a little bit of acting from a young boy.
One of the funnest parts of the episode, in my opinion.
I forget, Dad! What was even... I mean, I know the lead-up is like we have to get to Riker somehow to communicate this, but I think there must have been a line that I forget right before young Picard steps out and says that iconic bit to the
it's
Ferengi.
Funny that, like, when Picard is, like, saying he has to, like, all right, I know what I have to
I
do.
I know what has to
like,
be done.
It's, he's about to make the most, like, noble sacrifice he's ever made
in
his career.
He is.
I know what must be done.
The proud Captain Picard has to go pretend he has to, he wants to see his daddy.
His daddy Riker.
I want to see him now.
Now. The Ferengi like grabs him. He's like, ouch, you hurt me. I want to see my father.
I'd say we're ready. Have you figured out how to get to the bridge?
I'm afraid I can only think of one way.
What do you want?
I need to see my father.
Go back inside.
I need to see him right now.
Do not argue with me. Go back inside.
I need to see him now. Now. Stop it, you hurt me. I want my father.
All right, just stop that.
And so he gets himself into a room with...
Like how the Ferengi two are like not quite... Like, why does your kid have this weird British accent?
What's wrong
Riker?
With your son?
Why is he wearing a full uniform?
Like, yeah, why is he wearing an adult uniform? Anyway, it doesn't matter.
Why do you only have 3 dots and he has 4 dots?
And the... that exchange between... Riker and young Picard, where Picard's saying, like, we can't play any games on the classroom computer. Maybe
These Ferengi are stupid.
They're so fucking dumb. Hey, Daddy, could you hook up the games for the computer in schoolroom 8?
Don't they cut to the Ferengi that's guarding them in the observation deck, and he's just like looking out the window or something?
He only looks.
I will politely look away while you scheme.
He only looks back when Picard slips up and he says like, thanks, number one. And then he quickly covers with, he's my number one dad.
You humans are weird.
Which is so, that line, he's my number one dad. And then Riker and Picard share like the least believable hug there's ever been.
Oh, God. Yeah. Well, this,
so good.
So Riker gets the message and he eventually goes back to the bridge, and the Ferengi are just like, you need to, you know, unless you unlock the unless you give us computer access, we're going to start killing kids. Mm-hmm. And so we get one of the dumbest moments I've ever seen on. Well, no, it's actually
as someone who hates Riker, this is one of my favorite.
As a noted Riker hater,
this is one of my favorite Riker moments. I like
it. It plays more towards the stupidity of the Ferengi that he's able to like. He's like, all right, I'll do it. I don't want you to kill any kids, especially my number one son.
My number one son.
So he brings him over to the computer console. He's like, all right, whatever your name is. Like, here's how you do this. You do this. And he starts going into this long tirade of, like, science mumbo jumbo. And, of course, the Ferengi's like, duh. And so,
he's saying is, like, do you think he's actually explaining the...
He's probably, like, making some shit
like,
up.
Is it that complicated or...
I don't know.
I mean, his...
It's probably
it seems
pretty
like
complicated.
Riker's technical knowledge of the ship and whatnot, it seems to be pretty good. But I mean, when he's talking to Beverly earlier in the episode, when she's talking to him about what happened to their bodies, he's just like, it's been a long time since basic genetics, doctor. I don't remember this shit.
Look, I didn't pay attention during bio, but like I could make some shit up about how the Enterprise works.
Go ahead. Well, what's so great about the scene is that, like, the subterfuge he does is he basically just, like, has the guy, look over here, while my right hand is over here, going beep, boop, beep, boop, beep, boop. And what I love about it, it's one of the things that's so preposterous about Star Trek. You have this computer console, and they always have these things in episodes where, like, they need to do this, like, incredibly specific command. But he just presses, like, he's not even looking. I'm like, how the hell is he unlocking?
He knows it so well.
Beep, boop, beep, beep,
how
beep,
is he unlocking computer crawl to the little kid's computer in the
access
in the school?
Granted.
It's just wild.
It's incredible. It's everything I need Star Trek to be.
And it's also like, this was actually, because sometimes I think about this sometimes when I'm watching Star Trek, you know, because you see the computer consoles and it's just completely flat. It's like touchscreen, right? Mm-hmm. So unless you're looking
future style.
Unless you're looking at the thing, it's like I feel like you wouldn't necessarily know where your hand is or what buttons you're pressing. And it, like, this is when it got me thinking, like, I remember watching, I think it was the special features for Star Trek II, and someone might have been the director was talking about like the production design and everything of the computer consoles and all that. And apparently at one point, and I'm pretty sure this is the case, I may be mixing it up a little bit, but Leonard Nimoy was like, hey, I think there should be some sort of like indicator on the buttons for me to know, like on a keyboard, like where my fingers are. Like on a keyboard, you know, there's a little two dots on F and J, so you know where your fingers are. Nimoy was like, shouldn't there be something similar on this computer console? So I feel like
maybe it's like maybe there's like a haptic feedback thing, you know, like the
okay,
like if your hand slips,
you know, like
or
how in back in the pre-Wasteland days iPhones, they have like the one button, but it's not actually a button anymore. It's just the screen gives you a little feeling like it is. I bet they have something like that.
That's true. There is
Star Trek.
I feel like there's many screenshots of this, of a character, usually like Riker or whatever, just like half sitting, like leaning against a machine. And it's like, your ass is pressing against like 10 buttons now.
The best is when they just have like coffee mugs, just sitting on the monitor.
Yeah, it's great. The future is great. Everything about Star Trek makes sense. And that said, back to the Ferengi plot.
Now you know what a forensic drive is, right?
Well, of course.
Yeah, I'm not stupid.
Just explain it to me, okay?
Explain it to me like if I didn't know what it was, though.
Explain it to me like I'm a 5-year-old. No reason.
Explain it to me like I'm really fucking stupid. Let's just assume that I'm really dumb.
And the kids work together to outsmart the Ferengi, as we said. They come up with a plot where, like, earlier Alexander helped them, like, steal back some, like, phasers. And they have a whole plot where they attach their Starfleet comm badges to the Ferengi to beam them into a force field in a certain, the transporter or whatever. And they're able to take back the ship as kids, as smart little rascally kids. And I did write down that, like, the whole plot to foil the Ferengi is very rascally.
I was waiting for a line from one of the Ferengi, like maybe the lead guy, Damon Lurin,
to
say,
like, You little rascals!
That would have just been the cherry on top of this episode to make it a full-on cartoon.
Cuts to, like, Picard, and he has a little cowlick in his hair.
But it's a fun episode. Like, I again, like, the premise is very Saturday morning cartoon, but I think they do it well, because again, I to me, like, the first half of the episode is the more for me, I think the best part of the episode, mm-hmm. just them dealing with this issue. The Ferengi part is just like, well, like you said, well, we gotta have some sort of conflict. It can't just be them dealing with this thing emotionally.
Yeah, we gotta have some action.
We gotta have some action in this episode. But yeah, the first half I think is really fun. The second half is just, you know, general Star Trek, it's fine.
General Star Trek.
General fine Star Trek.
I'm just more interested in the first half, especially like that line where Ensign Rose, like, our bodies were violated.
Delivery aside, yeah. That's what I really like about Rose as a character is that, like, she has been through the shit and she keeps going through the shit and she's upset. And understandably, that's why you gotta hope that you've got a Guinan in your life who can be like, dude, just go with the flow, just jump on a bed, it's okay. And that end scene where the adults are successfully turned back into adults, and then adult Guinan goes to the schoolroom to find Ro drawing a picture of her mother. And there's that exchange of, like, I guess it's my turn to go get turned back to normal. And Guinan's like, what's the rush? It's okay. And they draw a little bit. I love that the Ro is a sad girl at heart, the way all tough girls are. Oh, and that is kind of fucking insane, though, that at least one writer was like, what if Ro is just a 12-year-old now?
No, that was the actor. Yeah,
I kind of like
the writers
that.
Were like, "That's They're absolutely like, no, insane." No.
I kind of wonder. It's like, if I'm the writers, I'm like, "So what? Do you not want to be on the show anymore? Like, are you unhappy? What's going on?"
Well, it was going to be the Like, that was going to be it for Ro. That's why she suggested it.
Okay. Well, I'm glad it wasn't because, honestly, Ro comes in the previous season, season five. And for me, I think she's one of the more interesting additions to the show in general. Like, she brings a different flavor. Like you mentioned, like, she's been through the shit. She brings a little bit of that toughness, but more of the kind of serious shit that they'll get into on Deep Space Nine. I feel like,
yeah,
you know, she sort of brings that in, like, it just her and the Cardassians. There's a few things that they do in, like, season five, I think, that sort of, like, dip their toe, that it allows TNG to dip its toe into a little more serious things.
Yeah,
and
it's something that, like, DS9, as we said, goes into a lot more because it's you know, entirely set around on the space station that's above Bajor, which is all wrapped up in the Bajoran Cardassian thing still. But I think, yeah, Ro is kind of the first time we are introduced to, like, Bajorans in a real way. And they're one of the aspects of Star Trek that I find the most interesting. And her characterization as like, you know, she is kind of a bitch, which I like. And we understand why, because, again, like, I grew up in a refugee camp. Like, I'm an orphan. I've seen some shit. I didn't have a bed, but I'll be here and I'll work, even though I'll be, like, kind of an asshole about it sometimes. That's what you need.
Like, for me, Ensign Ro kind of signifies getting away from Gene Roddenberry and his perfect utopia vision where nobody could have interpersonal conflicts because everyone's perfect. Like, she kind of symbolizes, like, moving away from that and just making the show better, in my opinion. Like, I like kind of similar to, like for me, Ensign Ro episodes are kind of high points to me when it's specifically a Ro episode. I like those episodes. They're fun.
Yeah, same. And I love, off topic, but I really love the aspect of the Bajorans. I like the makeup that makes them alien-y, the little ridged nose, and I also like their little earrings, that they've always got the earring. It's a good alien.
That's a funny thing about Next Generation. I don't know if we've really discussed it yet, but, like, when they are all out of ideas for makeup, or the makeup budget's reached its capacity for that week or whatever, it's like, I don't know, just put a little piece of plastic on their nose.
Put a little ridge on their nose or eyebrow. It's fine. That'll do.
I don't know, maybe put some spots on their forehead or something. I don't fucking
know. Yeah, there's like the, you know, the Ferengi 6-hour makeup side of it, and then there's the, like, just give them an extra little bit of ridge on, like, one part of their face.
We ran out of attachable butts to put on your head. Yeah, we used them all for the Ferengi, so we'll just put a little piece of
plastic. We're all out of
orange
makeup
here.
And detachable butts.
Gross.
Oh, man.
Star Trek's a great show.
Yeah, I don't. Just for the record, I don't mind the little nose ridges. It's just like I get
it's
it.
Funny.
Like, you know, there are times
when
maybe some episodes or characters can't have, like, maybe the makeup budget is other episodes. They kind of have to sparse that shit out. They have to look ahead, like, oh, we need to save some of the money for the Borg episode that's coming up. Like,
oh yeah,
I
we have
it.
Like a big Cardassian one coming up. We gotta
exactly
prepare for that. But yeah, that's Rascals.
I think it's pretty safe. I mean, I get the sense that all of us would recommend this episode. I certainly would.
Yeah, I think it's I like it a lot. I feel like you gotta, like, this would be a weird one to, like, start Star Trek.
Yeah,
like, you have to be familiar.
It would be maybe a little weird.
So I would not recommend it as your first or even, like, first handful of episodes you watch. But once you're, like, you know, once you're into season six.
You have to attach to the characters a little bit and get to know them and like them for you. I feel to really appreciate this episode to get the nuances of how it's affecting each of these crew members to really appreciate it. I feel
that's why it works as a late season episode. Whereas, you know, if this had come in season like two or three, you'd be like, okay, I guess we're a silly show.
Well, to be fair, they did have silly episodes even
in
season
one
where everyone gets drunk or something.
Yeah. But well, but yeah, I would recommend it's if you like largely silly stuff, but also, you know, discussing the I don't even know what point I'm trying to make there. But if you like discussions, yeah, this is the one to go to. You like iconic squeaky voiced British boys saying and be Wesley Crusher's roommate.
Oh, I forgot about speaking of that kid. He comes back, actually. He comes back the movie Star Trek Generations. He's Picard's nephew, I think, or something. I can't remember his name. Like, I think he dies in, if I'm not mistaken, he might die in the movie. But then, like, when Picard does his little Nexus fantasy, his Victorian fantasy, like, he's suddenly alive and he's like, here you go, father, or
so
something like
the,
that.
According to the Trotopedia, he does show up, or actually, this was an episode before Rascals. From I think the season before, he does show up as Rene Picard.
Rene, that's it.
Jean-Luc's nephew in the episode Family.
Oh, I see. Okay, so I see what they're doing. So it's one of those things where it's like the younger version of me looks exactly like my nephew type thing. Okay,
I get it. Sometimes that happens.
I forgot that he showed up in the show too. Like, I figured it was one of those things where it's well, it's the movie, so people probably forgot that this kid played young version of Picard in the Rascals episode. You know, I figured it was one of those things, but he actually showed up as Rene in the series. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Mike, I believe you're next for the season 7 pick.
We're into season 7. There's, like, only one option, I feel like, that I can pick.
I am so afraid you're going to pick this episode, but I have a feeling you're going
to
pick.
I think I have to. I think it's the one you're afraid I'm going to pick. So season 7, you know, as you alluded to, is kind of like, well, what do we have left? Like, what can we do? God. And maybe arguably some reaches. although it does have the finale, All Good Things, which everyone...
The finale, like, for me is one of the... And I'm sure we'll get to it at some point in the future, but the finale to me is one of the best series finales of a show ever, in my opinion. Finalities, yeah. It's one of the best season finalities I've ever seen.
I agree, I think it's, like, universally loved, and I'm not picking that. I am picking Sub Rosa.
I knew it!
It's the one where Beverly Crusher's haunted.
Oh, no!
Okay, so she's excellent. Haunted by her grandma or something,
she's
right?
Haunted by the ghost that also haunted her grandma.
It's the ghost that's the horny ghost that's been haunting all the women in her family for hundreds
like,
of years.
And, like, dating them?
Yeah, haunting and fucking them. Yep. That's what happens.
Universally renowned as probably one of the worst episodes of the show, right?
Or best?
Oh, poor Gates McFadden.
I'll put it this way. This is an episode I've probably seen, like, the least out of all the episodes of the show. I'm even counting, like, season 1 episodes.
Oh, wow.
Well, get ready to watch it.
All right, well, the Apocalypse Video Trekcast will return with season 7's Sub Rosa. Things are gonna get weird. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Live long and prosper.
Engage.
Engage. Make it so. Make it number one dad.
My number one dad. He's my number one dad.
Captain's Log Supplemental. With the help of Dr. Crusher and her usual science mumbo-jumbo, our heroes have now been reverted back to their normal adult ages. However, I find myself wondering about the comic possibilities of a young Jean-Luc Picard at the Academy with Wesley Crusher. What antics would these two have gotten up to? Could we have seen a Revenge of the Nerd-style story take place? Or would young Wesley Crusher perhaps have convinced a teenage Picard to have sexual relations with an apple pie? Alas, these tales of sordid shenanigans will live on only in the disgusting, perverted world of fan fiction. End of log.